Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
From NPR and WBUR, I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's Here and Now. Former Presidents George W. Bush and George H.W. Bush today added their voices to the condemnation of racism and anti-Semitism after President Trump's bizarre press conference yesterday, in which he equated those protesting alongside white supremacists and Nazis in Charlottesville, Virginia on Saturday with the counter-protesters demonstrating against them. Here he is.
Not all of those people were neo-Nazis, believe me. Not all of those people were white supremacists by any stretch. Those people were also there because they wanted to protest the taking down of a statue, Robert E. Lee. So, excuse me, and you take a look at some of the groups and you see, and you know it if you were honest reporters, which in many cases you're not, but many of those people were there to protest the taking down of the statue of Robert E. Lee. So, this week it's Robert E. Lee. I noticed that Stonewall Jackson's coming down. I wonder, is it George Washington next week?
Let's get right to our political analysts. Paris Dennard, Republican strategist. Welcome to the studio here in Washington, Paris.
Glad to be here.
And Angela Rye, Democratic strategist. Hi, Angela.
Hello.
And so, Paris, I'm going to start with you. The president, yes, equated both sides, but also sided with those who don't want to take down these symbols of racism, or at least had sympathy for them. David Duke of the KKK tweets out a thank you to President Trump. Did President Trump reveal the real Trump yesterday, as opposed to the one reading a condemnation of hate groups off a teleprompter on Monday? Is this the real President Trump?
I think the real President Trump is the President Trump who disavowed David Duke and the KKK back in March of last year.
I think under this, force. It took Jake Tapper many times to get him to do that, but go ahead.
Yeah, I think he disavowed them. I think this is the same Donald Trump who disavowed the group and said hatred, bigotry, and violence have no place in American society. I think it's the same Donald Trump who did that on Saturday. And think even on the press conference yesterday, whether or not people think that it was scripted or unscripted or unhinged, whatever the words you want to say, he still, even in that press conference, condemned neo-Nazis and said that he condemned them and said they had no place in society. And so we wanted him to say it. We want him to say it repeatedly, and he's done so.
Paris, I think that a lot of your Republican colleagues have been much more critical of how he's handled this. Do you not want to join them in looking at what happened Saturday and looking at what happened yesterday and saying it was, I mean, as Charles Krauthammer on Fox News said, it was a moral disgrace?
I think a lot of my Republican colleagues have never been on the side of the president, so I wouldn't expect them to do it now. So I'm not surprised that Krauthammer and other people would say what they are saying. All I'm saying is this. The president did denounce them. He did disavow them. We may not like his style. We may not like his cadence. We may like the way he comes to different points and conclusions. But he did disavow them. He did say that they have no place in society, and that's a good thing. What I hope that we do is look forward and to figure out the root causes of this, because we can go back to 2015 when we had those young boys in Oklahoma chanting that there's no N-words allowed in SAE. These were
the fraternity,
middle class white Americans who said this. And this is shocking in 2015. We can go back to 2008 when President Bush had to, George W. Bush had to address the issue of Genesis 6 and had to tell the Americans that lynching was not appropriate and had no place in American society. So this is not a new phenomenon. This is something that we have got to get to the bottom of. And I think the roots of it display in the fact that there's a lot of hopelessness in this country amongst young African Americans, amongst young white people. When you are hungry, when you are poor, when you are illiterate and you have no job, you breathe a lot of hopelessness. And that's what I hope we can move forward and look to and try to solve some of these issues and these problems.
Angela, jump in.
My hopelessness doesn't stem from my joblessness or my illiteracy, because neither of those are my problem. My hopelessness comes from the fact that this man, who we warned America about throughout the 2016 election, won. And he won on the backs of Mexican people who he called drug dealers and rapists. He won on the backs of the Central Park Five, who he called for the death penalty for. He won on the backs of—
And they were exonerated later.
That's not even my point. My point is that this man who built his career, his professional life on bigotry and racism was the same person he was as a professional in New York as he was a candidate. And we should not be surprised. And all I can tell the American people is we told you so. My hopelessness comes from the fact that he is a bigot. My hopelessness comes from the fact that his rhetoric is rooted in white supremacy. My hopelessness comes from the fact that this is a violent day and age. And Charlottesville, we told you too. We told you in Baltimore. We told you in Ferguson. We told you in St. Paul. We have been telling you this. This is a problem. It is a code red. It is time for the American people, regardless of your race or your gender, your religion, your ethnicity, or whatever else, to wake up. This is a huge problem.
Angela, what do you think of people like House Speaker Paul Ryan and some other Republicans who have come out and they've kind of distanced themselves from what President Trump has been saying, but to many, not nearly strongly enough?
I'll say this. History is not kind to people who are lukewarm. History is not kind to those who kind of stood up against slavery. History is not kind to those who kind of stood up against the Holocaust. You have to be black or white on this issue, and no pun intended here, because I think you could be black or white regardless of your race. But it is time for us to call it what it is. This is a problem. It is violent, hateful speech, and that is where we are. And this president is not a leader. He has demonstrated his inability to tone things down. That is why Barack Obama is still, you know, the person folks are looking to, even on social media, for answers, because this man is doing the very opposite of what we would expect a commander-in-chief to do in these times.
Look, let's hear from another Republican, and then afterwards, Paris, I want to ask you about this. This is on ABC's Good Morning America. There are some voices, as you said, Jeremy, and this is the head of the Republican Party, Ronna Romney McDaniel. She defended the president's three attempts to condemn the violence in Charlottesville. And then she said this.
We have no place in our party at all for KKK, anti-Semitism, racism, bigotry. It has no place in the Republican Party. There is no home here. We don't want your vote.
So there is one voice, Paris. But people think that President Trump is speaking out of both sides of his mouth and sending huge dog whistles to white supremacists, to Nazis, that he doesn't really mean it when he says like things like that. Paris, I know this has been very hard for you. You've had your African-Americanism challenged on the cable shows that you appear on. Especially in the African-American community, you hear a president say that, I sympathize with these people who don't want these statues removed. How do you defend that?
I can't defend the people who have attacked my blackness. I can't defend the people who have called for me to be killed, who've told me if I step foot in their neighborhoods that they will murder me and murder my mother, murder my family, murder. I can't defend the hatred that has come towards me because I'm a free-thinking African-American who happens to be Republican and believes that the president did the right thing by condemning and distancing himself and the party from these hateful people. But I will say this. The president, in my opinion, has disavowed it. And it's up to the rest of us to join hands and to figure out ways that we can do in our own community.
But are you willfully ignoring what he did yesterday? That was embracing. That was embracing white supremacists, Nazis. We are hearing from Jewish people who are considering leaving the country. This isn't just a black-white issue.
It's certainly not a black-white issue. And I think that there's people like Dr. Condoleezza Rice who said that we cannot whitewash that we can't wash over and erase our history. We need to have, there is a growing contingency of people who believe that taking away all of these statues is not that best thing to do.
They weren't there. We've had reporters say they weren't there. These were white supremacists and Nazis.
I'm just talking about some of the things that I'm hearing from people that saying we shouldn't just erase our history. We need to learn. A lot of these millennials don't know the history. If we use this same logic, let's get rid of the Holocaust Museum. Let's get rid of African American Museum. No, we need to keep those there. And if you want to keep the monuments of the Confederate, put up something that tells you what they did and why it was wrong, and have an understanding to know that these people were terrible and that what they did was wrong.
Angela, let's let you in there.
Here's the problem. There's a total difference between erasing history and honoring the Confederacy. And I think that is where there is a hard line in the sand for many of us who cannot stand the fact that our ancestors suffered through the transatlantic slave trade, bled, died, were raped, killed, and treated like mammals, like treated like beasts. That is the real problem here. And Paris, I have to believe that you don't think that we have to revere the Confederacy by holding up monuments and statues. Your president is the same one who said, instead of Harriet Tubman being on the $20 bill, perhaps we can put her on the $2 bill. This is the same person. It's not about revering and honoring history. We don't have a damn Hitler statue up. There's a reason for that. And so I'm saying we need to honor our blackness enough and force the rest of the American people to honor black people enough to not disrespect us by honoring and revering the Confederacy. That is the problem. And until we get on that page, we're going to continue to have the issues that we've seen in Charlottesville this week.
I think we need to leave it right there just because of our time restrictions. But I also want to point out some breaking news this afternoon, which is President Trump has just tweeted today, rather than putting pressure on the business people of the Manufacturing Council and Strategy and Policy Forum, I am ending both. So a bit of news there, and we will pick that up as we continue to follow
after
it.
Several lefts because of what we're talking about. Yeah.
Well, Paris Denard, Republican strategist, and Angela Rye, Democratic strategist, thanks so much, as always.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
It's here and now, and to the Philippines now, where police have killed more than 30 people in drug raids in a 24-hour period, thought to be the highest death toll in a single day in the country's long-running drug war. The raids were carried out yesterday in Bulacan Province, north of the capital, Manila. So joining us from Manila is the BBC's Howard Johnson. And Howard, we've seen these images of dead people in this drug crackdown led by the country's president, Duterte. But what happened during this recent raid, and put it in context?
So what we saw was during a 24-hour operation, 24 police forces in the province of Bulacan came together for what is being described as the simultaneous big-time operation. This is the first of its kind during this drugs war that's been going on for over a year, where we've seen at least 7,000 people killed, many other cases that are uninvestigated and unsolved, so the death toll could be way higher. Some other people think that the true death toll could go up to 14,000, many of them extrajudicial killings, people killed with their hands bound together, crime scenes eradicated so investigations can't really take place. But back in Bulacan, this is the first of its kind where we've seen a whole province work together to go at the drug pushers and users in their area.
And what are police saying about the raids?
Well, police say that of the 32 people that were killed, that they were actually suspected drug offenders who were armed and resisted officers. Human rights groups have already expressed concern about this. But perhaps what's more interesting is the president has come out in the last few hours and he said, and I quote, "That's good. If we can kill another 32, we can solve the ills of this country." And then he went on to say, "It really takes a toll, whether you're the victim or the suspect. I will be able to solve the problem if I kill them all." So as we can see there, President Duterte, and according to his State of the Nation address last month, he said he'll continue to hound drug users and pushers till the gates of hell, as he said in his speech.
And to remind people, the current president, Duterte, when he was mayor of a city, he has said now that he would actually kill suspected criminals. He's admitted that.
Yes, President Duterte has said this on a number of occasions now. He has said, actually, last month during his State of the Nation address, similar to the State of the Union address in the United States, he said that he had killed, while he was mayor of Davao, a city on the island of Mindanao in the south. But with President Duterte, one thing that he has also said is that he says, with every five things I say, three things will be false. So people don't really know what to think when he says I've killed someone. So though he said it on a number of occasions, he also says, don't believe everything I say. So it creates an atmosphere of confusion and people don't really know what has happened.
Well, and you mentioned extrajudicial killings. You talked to people who said that in one case, a son of a woman had reported his marijuana use to police. Is that supposed to signify that it was legal? I mean, give us context for that.
Well, I spoke to a lady who had gone along to a Catholic center to try to get some respite from the consequences of her son being killed in this operation. Now, he was a marijuana smoker. He had declared to the local authorities that he was smoking marijuana just after President Duterte launched the drugs war in July of last year. Now, 3 months later, masked vigilantes came to his door, barged it open, and shot him dead in his home. His mother said that he had nothing to do with dealing marijuana. He smoked it, and yet there was a gun placed by his body, as she says, with three sachets of marijuana. Now, she says they were placed with the body, and I can't verify whether that's true or not, but he was just a drug smoker, according to her. And she said that he is been racked with guilt because he had invited her for dinner in the week before his death, and that all she can think about is how she had turned him down because she was too busy with work.
Well, and in other words, the point that she was trying to make was that he wasn't a dealer, he was a user. But how do Filipinos feel about, for instance, the crackdown in the last 24 hours?
Well, if you speak to taxi drivers, you speak to residents of Manila, and they will tell you that since this drugs war began, they feel that maybe the streets of Manila are safer. I've heard that on numerous occasions from people I've spoken to. A taxi driver just the other day was saying to me that on the main highway here, the EDSA highway in Manila, notorious for drug-related crime, people grabbing and stealing out of cars, he said that completely subsided. And I guess that reflects in President Duterte's opinion poll rating, which, despite the condemnation of his drugs war, he still, in the last Pulse Asia poll, scored an opinion poll approval rating of 82%.
That's the BBC's Howard Johnson in Manila. Howard, thank you.
It was my pleasure.
So, we need a break. And we're getting one on Monday. Everyone in the contiguous 48 states will have a chance to see a partial eclipse of the sun, weather permitting. For a total eclipse, you need to be within 70 miles of the path of totality, which stretches from Oregon to South Carolina. Hopkinsville, Kentucky is squarely in that path. In fact, scientists say it's at the point of greatest eclipse, which means the moon will be at its closest point to the Earth. People there will experience the longest stretch of darkness and the best view of the solar corona. So Hopkinsville is preparing for 100,000 people to descend on it. Businesses are hoping to profit. Roxanne Scott from Here and Our contributor WFPL reports.
The open-air Casey Jones Distillery in Hopkinsville has a distinctive aroma as soon as you enter.
You're smelling corn mash that we make our moonshine with.
That's Peg Hayes.
I'm a factotum, which means I do everything.
She works here with her husband, Arlen Casey Jones, the master distiller. And for the past decade, Hayes has been thinking about how to capitalize on being smack in the middle of the path of totality for the solar eclipse. From August 18 through 21, the distillery will host thousands of people for eclipse-related events. And Hayes says she has a special cut of moonshine just for the occasion.
Well, a couple of years ago, we trademarked Total Eclipse Moonshine, and we've been selling it now for about 2 years.
If that isn't gimmicky enough, Hayes says she also has a special release of space moonshine. For that, the distillery sent some of its corn mash to space. It didn't make it, but that didn't stop Hayes.
It's easy to drink, it's very smooth, and when you add the space component to it, it's out of this world.
Before being rechristened Eclipseville, Hopkinsville's claim to fame was that it's the world's largest producers of bowling balls. The town makes more than 500,000 bowling balls per year. This agricultural area is not immune to supernatural events. 5 miles north in Kelly, Kentucky, on the same day as the eclipse, but in 1955, a family claimed that aliens attacked their home. The event eventually became inspiration for the 1982 movie E.T.
E.T. phone home?
E.T. phone home.
And this August 21, for 2 minutes and 40 seconds, the moon will block out the sun in the sky above Hopkinsville.
If you were to take a dowel rod and stick it through the sun and through the moon and pinpoint a place on the earth where everything lined up most perfectly, that is Hopkinsville, Kentucky.
That's Brooke Young, who was hired by the city of Hopkinsville to handle eclipse-related marketing and events. She also goes by the Queen of Darkness. And today, after talking with me, she has a meeting with NASA.
Today, they're kind of just scoping out, working with the electricity and the different cell signals and service that is out there.
On August 21, NASA will be in Hopkinsville to telecast the event. Young estimates the city will get 100,000 visitors, but it's hard to tell.
This isn't like the Derby or Super Bowl where people have to have a ticket to come. This is something where they can literally wake up in Louisville or Lexington or Cincinnati or anywhere across the drivable distances and jump in their car and drive down that day.
That means lots of logistics. The city has to make sure it has enough water, sunscreen, eclipse glasses, and porta potties to accommodate moon gazers. And businesses in the area want to profit off the eclipse economy. Take Juliana Carlisle, owner of Milkweed in downtown Hopkinsville. She sells soaps, oils, and teas.
Anything else that would help with wellness? We have fair trade items here.
She's also selling special gray eclipse t-shirts with an image of an eye and Hopkinsville's longitude and latitude. And while Carlisle is excited about the business prospects of the eclipse, she's a little nervous about the sudden influx of people, too.
Like, okay, there might be 50,000 people here. And then it was like, no, there's probably going to be 100,000 people here. As the numbers rise, I get a little bit more terrified and excited at the same time.
Earlier this year, Hopkinsville Mayor Carter Hendricks made a Facebook video to calm down fears and ask citizens to be eclipse ambassadors.
We're excited to be able to play host to what I'm referring to as a cosmic Super Bowl.
Asked if E.T. or other aliens will pay a visit during the totality, the mayor had this to say.
I don't know if they are, but if they do, I know that to see them, you're going to need to be in Hopkinsville in Christian County, Kentucky.
And he says you can't put a dollar amount on that kind of publicity.
By federal law, we cannot enter the gift
Back at the Casey Jones Distillery, Peg Hayes tells me about another one of her specialty drinks.
We make Moonaritas, and we use margarita mix, peach, and 92 proof moonshine.
And after the years of preparation culminating on August 21, there's something she's looking forward to.
The group event of such an incredible celestial event. That communion of soul and spirit with the eclipse is the number one thing that I find so exciting.
But there is another thing.
The number two thing that I hope is I'm able to pay all my bills that we're making to make this thing happen.
For Here and Now, I'm Roxanne Scott.
This Here and Now podcast is sponsored by ZipRecruiter, making it quick and easy to find quality candidates. Instantly post your job to over 100 job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Plus, get access to over 6 million resumes. Select, screen, and rate candidates with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard and find the right hire fast. Find out why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 100 companies and thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. Get started for free today at ZipRecruiter.com/here.
The Texas bathroom bill that called for people to use the public restroom, shower, or locker room matching the sex on their birth certificate is dead. Not because it was voted on, but because it wasn't by the time the Texas legislature adjourned its 30-day special session yesterday. This marks the second time a bill meant to restrict transgender bathroom access has collapsed in the Texas legislature, despite strong support from the governor. Ben Philpott is senior editor at KUT in Austin. Ben, why did the legislature adjourn without a vote on this bill?
Well, the Speaker of the Texas House was not interested in this bill coming up for a vote, and the committee chairman of the committee that it would have had to flow through in the House did not even hold a hearing.
Was there support for it if they had brought it up for a vote?
I think that publicly there were a majority of lawmakers, all Republicans, who said, yes, they would vote for it. The Speaker, of course, and others have said that behind closed doors, you hear from lawmakers who say, I don't want to have to vote on this.
How significant a defeat is this for the Republican Governor Greg Abbott?
You know, he wanted 20 things to get passed, 20 items done during this legislative special session. The bathroom bill is among 11 things that he did not get sent to his desk. So he's been focusing more recently on some things like a property tax bill that did not make it to his desk. But the lieutenant governor here in Texas has been very vocal about this being a big blow and something that the Republican base really wants. And he's saying that he'd like to give it another shot at some point.
Well, and transgender advocates are cheering this today, but opposition to the bill was pretty widespread. Businesses like Amazon and ExxonMobil opposed it. Even some law enforcement agencies were against it. What were they saying?
Well, you know, they just said that, again, this is, you know, the bill was being pushed as a safety issue, that, you know, it would protect women in bathrooms from sexual predators being able to come in and attack them. Police were saying that this is, you know, these are statistics we don't see. So it's a bill that was looking for a problem that wasn't there.
And by the way, the Texas Association of Businesses said it could have cost the state $5.6 billion over the next decade, if it had passed, pretty significant.
Yeah, and it really, you know, that kind of is what the big difference was between the regular session and the special session. In the regular session, the House actually did pass a version of the bathroom bill, which some said was very watered down from what the Senate wanted. But then as more and more business groups came out and said that they didn't want this to happen, you got no bill this time in the Texas House.
So some conservatives had hoped that if this had passed, it could have revived momentum for other states to pass similar laws. North Carolina partially repealed its bathroom bill back in March. You say that they may try again on this in Texas.
Yeah, the Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick had a press conference late last night saying, you know, we should do this in a special session, but that it absolutely we should do this in the next legislative session, which is in 2019, and that it's a fight that isn't going away. He said that he even implored the speaker to go ahead and put this in the rearview mirror, get this done with so they don't have to do it again, because he says, yeah, we will.
That's Ben Philpott, senior editor at KUT in Austin, Texas. Ben, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, as we prepare for a big celestial event next Monday, the total eclipse of the sun, we're taking a few minutes now for an eclipse edition of the Here and Now DJ Sessions.
Black hole sun, won't you come?
Yes, I'm being followed by a moon shadow, moon shadow, moon shadow.
And the sun is eclipsed by the moon.
Marian Hodges is a DJ at KCRW in Santa Monica, California, where the total eclipse will sadly not be visible. But Marian, at least you're going to have some eclipse-themed music to listen to.
That is right. This was such a fun assignment to think about and put together.
Did we put you up to this, or did you come up with this on your own?
You put me up to this, but I am very thankful for it. As soon as I saw the idea, I was like, ooh, project.
All right, well, let's see what you came up with here, starting with the song from the British group The Clientele. This is called Lunar Days. So tell us about this one.
Well, so this is a recent song. It is the first single from the first album that The Clientele has put out in 7 years. It's forthcoming. It's Music for the Age of Memories. And this is one of my most anticipated records of 2017. So I figured it has the word lunar in the title. I'm just going to throw it onto this list. And I think it's pretty appropriate, too, that this record comes out on September 22nd, which is the first day of fall, because The Clientele's music is so often described as having that autumnal sound.
Well, and kind of a throwback sound, too. I'm surprised that it's new.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They really, really love the 60s, and particularly that 60s AM radio kind of thing, like the Association. So
right.
You can hear it in all of their music, but they just keep advancing the sound with each and every record.
Okay, now to a song that I'm so glad you put in because I really like this song. People may recognize it's originally from Neil Young, but this is the poolside version of Harvest Moon. So, first of all, Poolside has a new album out. This is not from the new album, but the new album is great, too. It does seem like the kind of thing that you should be listening to at the poolside, and maybe for some people in the United States, they can do that while also watching the eclipse.
Wouldn't that be the dream?
Yeah.
So I love how the moon kind of is a character in this song. Both versions, you know, they have the same lyrics, so they just invite you right in. Come in a little closer, hear what I have to say. And then as he's telling this story of this long-term romance, the Harvest Moon kind of becomes a character. So it's probably my favorite moon-related song, and it's one of my favorite cover songs. I think I play this at every single wedding I DJ.
Hmm. Well, and when it comes to the actual astronomy that we're dealing with here, Harvest Moon is the full moon that falls closest to the autumn equinox, which is September 22nd this year.
Yeah, I just learned that this morning as well. And I loved how it kind of related back to that Clientele song, which, you know, the record is coming out on the 22nd. So I was like, oh, there's a little bit of a connection and a theme there. So, yeah, it's always fun to learn new trivia like that.
Well, and what trivia can you tell us about Poolside?
Well, all I can really tell you is they're one of my favorite LA DJ production duos. That song, that cover, was actually what put them on the map for me. And they're just good, solid dudes. And the term that was kind of coined for their sound is daytime disco. So like you said, it's very appropriate for Poolside. And it's kind of become a thing here in Los Angeles that, you know, sort of 105 to 110 BPM. You could dance to it, but you could also just sit and vibe out to it. That's kind of the thing that Poolside really pioneered.
All right. Well, as we continue our DJ session related to the eclipse, let's move on to the song Sun from the Canadian producer Caribou, a.k.a. Dan Snape. So what do you like about this one, Marion?
Sorry, I was just getting lost in my trance there. That's one of the things I love so much about it. It takes you into it. As soon as you put it on, that's the first thing you hear. Sun, and then that tribal beat starts up, and it's just repetitive, and you just go with it. Much like Harvest Moon is probably my favorite moon-related song, this is my favorite sun-related song. And so as soon as I thought, well, we're talking about the eclipse, the moon will cover the sun. So it's kind of an equal thing. I should do a couple of moon songs. I should do a couple of sun songs. And then immediately I thought, Caribou, yes, I get to play that for massive amounts of people. Mm-hmm. They're such masters of that kind of electronic psychedelia. And that song is such a perfect example of it. You can really just picture yourself dancing out like in some desert under a blazing sun and just being so, so into it.
Well, we have time for one more eclipse-related song, Marion, and it is going to be, people will not be surprised to hear this, Total Eclipse. This is, though, the Mark Almond version. Total eclipse. What are we listening to here, Marion?
Right. Probably a bit on the nose, but as soon as I remembered, because I was initially remembering the Klaus Nomi version, and I used to own it, but I couldn't find it to share with us today. But then, fortunately enough, I was able to track down a copy of Mark Almond's version, and I mean, I love both versions, but I do like how he really just, he kept the theatricality, of course, but he just went in and really amped up those synthesizers and just new waved it out.
Well, as we wrap up this segment, let's listen to the version that people probably know of Total Eclipse. That would be the Bonnie Tyler version. And we say goodbye to Marion Hodges, DJ at KCRW in Santa Monica. Marion, thanks so much. Enjoy the little bit of the eclipse you'll be able to see.
I will do my very best. Thanks so much for having me.
And if you want to hear more, go to our Spotify playlist. We're NPR Here and Now on Spotify. We're also on Apple Music and at hereandnow.org. Love is like a shadow on me all of the time.
Falling apart. Nothing I can do. A total eclipse of the heart.
What is true about what happened in Charlottesville, where hate groups rallied to protest the removal of a statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee? President Trump equated those counter-protesting the Nazis with the Nazis and white supremacists. Vice News released a video of the hate group members marching with torches the night before the Saturday rally, chanting, "Jews will not replace us."
Jews will not replace us! Jews will not replace us!
Well, yesterday, President Trump said there were also fine people alongside the hate groups protesting the removal of a statue that was important to them. Sarah Rankin, an AP reporter, was there this past weekend. She joins us now from Charlottesville by Skype. Sarah, you tell us you didn't see those fine people. It seemed to you these were members of the hate groups supporting the statue.
Yes, absolutely it did. The majority of people that I saw seemed to be wearing uniforms of some type, carrying flags, they were shouting racial slurs, they were antagonizing counter-protesters. There didn't seem to me to be a large number of everyday people in their crowd.
The Washington Post is reporting that they also, this is an open carry state, also were carrying, many of them, guns.
Yes, that's correct. There were people heavily armed. There was, I would say, a militia presence. There were people dressed in what looked like almost National Guard-type uniforms, and they didn't have any other identification, so it was a little disorienting and hard to tell which side they were on.
Yeah, we hear that those 30 or so people were a militia that marched in with long rifles and, as you say, camo. So that's on the right. What did you observe of the counter-protesters? Who were they?
There were, among the counter-protesters, there were folks from a lot of different groups. There were Black Lives Matter protesters. There were people, there were members of the clergy, around a dozen of whom at one point locked arms, sort of blocked the entrance to the park. There were everyday folks. I talked to a Charlottesville resident who said he came out because he was upset and didn't understand how so much hate could show up in the town. There was a woman walking around with an armful of flowers, passing them out to people. There were a group, there was a small group standing in a circle singing religious songs on the edge of the sort of the pen where the rally attendees had gathered.
Well, and there were also members of Antifa. This is an international anti-fascist group. It has its roots in fighting the Nazis during the Holocaust. It has no office, no leader. Members light fires in garbage cans. They pull down statues. Orrin Siegel of the Anti-Defamation League says they can ratchet up violence, for instance, when they show up to support peaceful Black Lives Matter marches. They were there. How many of them did you see?
You know, in the chaos, it was hard to get an exact crowd count, but I would say there were likely dozens at the least. There were folks waving Antifa flags who had banners. At one point, I watched them sort of congregate together and then shout as they marched toward the area where some white nationalists had gathered. And I know photos showed counter-protesters engaging in violence. So the president is not wrong when he said that there were people on both sides who engaged in violence.
Well, but critics of the president, of course, say it's a false equivalency to completely equate people who fight Nazis with Nazis who want ethnic cleansing, you know, and who were provoking. The Washington Post is reporting that the right-wingers, as they marched towards a line of these protesters, that they made the first move. Is it possible to tell? I mean, it seemed pretty chaotic. What was your observation?
Excuse me. I certainly think that could have been true, but it was really chaotic. There were hundreds or maybe more than 1,000 people sort of packed into one small area outside the park. So in the fray, it was a little difficult to tell exactly who was instigating the pockets of violence that were breaking out.
And what were some of the things you were hearing from the Nazis and the white supremacists, the KKK, Daily Stormer, these hate groups? What were some of the things they were yelling?
I heard them yelling racial slurs. I heard them shouting at a woman about asking her why she didn't care about the future of her race. She was white. I heard them chanting.
Did you get to speak to any members of Antifa about being provoked, or how did they respond to what was going on? Did you speak with them?
Afterward, later in the day, I spoke to someone who identified himself as part of the Antifa movement, but he said that he had been engaged nonviolently and sort of stressed that not everyone who considers themselves part of that movement was violent on Saturday.
And from your observation, people talk about a false equivalency, but also the numbers. How many members of the hate groups were there relative to protesters? Could you tell? I mean, a rough estimate?
Authorities have not provided an official crowd estimate, but I was there with a colleague, photographer Steve Helberg. He and I collaborated, and we both thought that based on our rough count and looking at pictures taken from above street level after the fact, that there were at least 500 people there to attend the rally and likely double that amount there to protest it.
Sarah Rankin with the AP in Charlottesville. Sarah, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
So she says about a few dozen Antifa members out of 1,000 counter-protesters. Did that equal the hate groups? Your thoughts are welcome at hereandnow.org. Here and Now is a production of NPR and WBUR. I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is Here and Now.